Here is one of a series of talks by spiritual leader Lola McDowell Lee, spanning two decades from the early 70s through the 90s. Lola was a Zen Roshi whose Rinzai lineage included Dr. Henry Plutov and renowned Zen master Shigetsu Sasaki. Lola was a religious scholar as well as an ordained Christian minister. While the talks are focused mainly on Zen and Buddhism, Lola drew on many spiritual traditions, including those of Jesus, Plato, Lao Tzu, the Hindu Vedas, Meister Eckhart, and Gurdjieff.
Student once asked the teacher, you know, what is Buddha? And this teacher answered him by saying, the mind is Buddha. This was his answer. So this Buddha that we talk about. The Buddha, the man, was the son of a king of a small country in the southern part of what is now Nepal. And he was born 560 years before Jesus. And he was born, as the legend goes, in a garden under a blossoming tree. When he realized his Buddha nature and became the enlightened one or the awakened one, he was called the Buddha, Buddha Shakyamuni. He lived 80 years and he left a lasting, tremendous influence, not only on his disciples of that time, but the influence that has come down through all the centuries since then. Mighty influence of this man. On the full moon night, under a sala tree, he passed away. Or as we would say, or his disciples would say, he entered Parinirvana. So this man was born under a blossoming tree, he was enlightened under the Bodhi tree, and he passed away under a sala tree. So now, every now and then, we plant trees, and Rosalind is, of course, most anxious to plant a tree out there now in memory of Jack. And I think, and she thought too, maybe trees are trees only for memorials? We can plant trees for people living? Sure. So then she wanted to plant one for Shinsan Sama. And I said, sure, we should do that, only just not today. And then I think we should plant about 10 trees for Rosalind. Yeah.
Maybe
81?
Maybe 20.
Maybe 20. You're right. Yeah. So anyway, many people are born today, and many people are passing away today. This is birth and death. Coming into existence and leaving existence. So now, what is birth and what is death? We do Zazen. And one of the purposes of Zazen is to come to know life through death. The ego consciousness dies, and as Shinsan Sama said, then the Zen man is born. What is birth and what is death? Now, fundamentally speaking, birth is a phenomenon. To get married is another phenomenon, and we celebrate today Tim and Lori's wedding anniversary. I married them a year ago. Yeah. And today, and birthdays are a phenomenon, and today is Kimmy's birthday, yeah, which we should be celebrating. I guess maybe she is. So getting married is a phenomenon. Eating is a phenomenon. Getting old is a phenomenon. To get sick is a phenomenon. Huh? And to die is a phenomenon. You know, I clap my hands together and again and again and again, and it's all phenomenon. Our lives are a continuation of phenomena, you know, on and on and on and on. Sometimes we dramatize them so that we live great drama, and sometimes we make them very small so that we won't be so involved. But we call little ones or big ones, they're drama, they're the drama of our life. One drama finishes, and we have a drama here of this mourning ceremony. And so now another drama begins. Life is a continuation of one drama after the other. Drama after drama. I talk for a little while, that's a phenomenon. Sometimes I talk with lots of feeling, very dramatic. Sometimes not. Sometimes boring. Yeah. We go to the theater. We see the drama, and we enjoy the performance. And they have rehearsed long and hard so that you can enjoy it. But in life, there is no rehearsal of the drama. You're pitted right up against it, boom. And how you respond shows you what you are. Turns out okay, this drama turns out fine, and we say, oh, well, we lucked out. Because in a way, we didn't have anything to do with it. Yeah. Sometimes it doesn't turn out the way we think it should be. And we run around with a long face and cry big tears. You know. Somehow later, the situation changes again, and we go around, oh, it's okay, we lucked out again. But the drama. We cannot rehearse life, and we cannot know what may happen. So one of the most important things that we can learn through Zazen is to be ready, to be very quietly alert. You must be alert to see what is occurring with you while you are sitting. You can't just sit there and get lost in your fantasies. Quietly alert, dropping the ego identification. This way, life is never boring. Life is not boring. It may be happy and it may be sad, but not boring. And in this continuation, we, you know, all of us, we have preferences. We like to be happy. We like to be delighted. We like to live on the crest of the wave, as it were. We want to be joyous. We don't like anything that's sad. No. And when we have a conversation, we say such things, oh, it's beautiful. We are so happy. It's great. It's fantastic. It's wonderful. Etc. Etc. And so vita. We try to describe our reactions. We are trying to describe the existential point of view. That is, we are trying to describe how we are existing at that moment. existence and fundamental. It is important for us to know that the happy aspect or the sad aspect of ourselves is the phenomenal. Birth is a fundamental phenomenon. They are inseparable. That which is fundamental and what we call existing, inseparable. A lot of our confusion comes because we think the fundamental aspect of ourselves, or let us call it perhaps as we do here in the West, the noumenal aspect, the fundamental reality, the fundamental aspect we think is the same as the existence aspect. You understand? If we take the two to be the same, which they are not, they are only two aspects of one. One hand. Two aspects. These aspects appear simultaneously, but they must be distinguished one from the other. You know, we could say if we had no emotions, it would be much easier for us to stand, for us to understand this situation. But at the same time, if we had no emotions, our lives would be tasteless. But it is this taste, these emotions, that greatly confuses. Now, none of us prefer pain. We don't want it. Now, it's painful to me that I know that I have to say goodbye to Shinzon Sama today. Pain is pain. And again, it confuses us. Yeah? We try to run from it. And so we make it confusing. We don't just sit there with it and just say, well, pain is pain, and that's all. You know, I sat a little longer up there last night than I am accustomed to, and some of my old pains came back from when I used to sit a long time. And there it was, you know, an old friend. Oh, yeah, I know you. It's pain. So what? Pain is pain. We have mental attitudes about it. This is our confusion. The mental attitude that you have about something, do you think it changes things? What happens if you turn, well, hate is a pretty strong word. Let us say envy. If you, instead of envying somebody, you turn around and you really like them. You really like them. You've got a compassion for them. Have you tried it? It's a beginning exercise, actually. Have you tried being receptive to yourself instead of rejecting yourself? We do a lot of rejecting of ourselves. And in this rejection, we walk into a room of people and we look around and we say, oh, they are rejecting us. Not true. We have rejected ourselves at the beginning, and that causes all the rest. Rejection starts with you. When you're doing Zazen, you know, watch your attitude about it. Sometimes your pain is really excruciating, and I know it. Don't hate it. Don't reject it. Don't just sit there and say, I've got to go through this thing, and you squirrel up your face, and everybody knows you're sitting there in pain. And but then so we realize is everybody else. You just go deeper into yourself. Deeper down into yourself. Deep down. And there's where you transcend the pain. You transcend the pain by going deep. That is, you transcend the phenomenal self. Gordon, when he was staying those weeks at Daitokuji, he learned to focus to get rid of pain. How else could he get away from it? You learn to focus. Bill at Shogenji, he learned to focus to get rid of the pain. I'm sure David did at the beginning too. Learn to focus. Use what you have got. It is a tool. Use what you have got and don't complain about it. We're all in the same boat. And in this same boat that in which we find ourselves, naturally we are very egocentric. The world revolves around me, we say. That is an ordinary point of view. It is an egotistical point of view. It is a point of view of the ego. See? So look at it. It's what's happening to me that's important. Shinzan-sama asked last night, what is it that you want out of Sesshin? Most people, when they're asked, they say, well, I want enlightenment. I want freedom. Well, I want this, and I want that, and I want the other thing. If you look, what I is asking this, it is the ego. And the ego is never, ever, 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 ever going to be enlightened. It has to be dropped. And then one day, somewhere along the line during the Zazen, all of a sudden we see this clear, vast sky. And we realize all of a sudden we really are in the meditation. We really have arrived at that place. And it is such a fragile seeming place. So we look and we start planning how to keep it with us. And you know what happens there. You all know what happens there. It is long gone. So, now, instead of planning how to keep it, oh, look at this. Look at this. I've got to keep this, That's the ego has come back into the picture. You know. Help the meditation. Help it to become deeper. And become deeper. And then radiate that out generously. Give it. Expand it. Radiate. My God, this is a marvelous thing that has occurred, Radiate it out. And if you can do this, it's like there is something almost, we could almost call it like a little door, and it opens, swings open. It's a turning point, is what it is. It's a turning point from our ordinary egotistical attitudes, our egotistical way of thinking, to a more enlightened way of thinking. Now, this Zazen and this meditation, it is to clear your mind and to make us mature. But we enlightenment is to come, sooner or later, we're going to have a different attitude. The sooner we take it, the better. Our conventional way of thinking, you know, oh, I hate this pain. I hate this pain, and I'm not going to do this anymore because the zazen that I have, that what is there, is so little compared to all of this pain that I have. I just want to keep the good zazen for myself. And I'll give the pain to everybody else. But I want a good zazen. Huh? This doesn't work. Enlightenment, you know, is kind of a spiritual revolution. You know, it is a turnaround from our ordinary egocentric way of thinking. Turn around. Just turn around. And so then we decide, oh, yes, I do really want this thing after all. You know. So we then talk about deepening our zazen. And we use such words as deep. Deep and profound. Now, what does that mean? What does this deep mean? We know about deep breathing, that you don't breathe from up here, you breathe from down here, right? In the lower abdomen. Yeah. That's deep. This is shallow. This is high, this is deep. Huh? We designate this, huh? We know deep breathing from the hara. What about, though, this deep zazen? Deep zazen has to do with deep breath. The breath becomes so quiet, it's almost goes with the stillness within you. Breathing from deep within, almost still. Not trying to transfer anything to anywhere. Not trying to climb a ladder to see if God is up there or if the Buddha is there or if I'm going to find the wisdom over there. No. You don't transfer anything. Everything is right here, right now. It is not necessary to push the breath, to regulate it, to make it do what you want, because that's the ego again. You just let it. It knows what it's doing. Better than you do, huh? The breath goes all by itself. And then the mind is clear and transparent. It is as clear as a clear sky. So in this zazen, we're now set in the lower abdomen. We're set in this hara, in the center. This is the center of the Zen practice. Don't put any pressure. Let the body relax. Don't put any pressure anywhere. You let the body relax, but you, the mind, let the consciousness pay attention. It's like listening to a sound that you can't hear. Listen in that quietness. Listen in that silence. Be alert. You don't put a lot of pressure on your ears to hear what I've got to say, thinking you're going to understand it better. You don't do that. And you don't put a lot of pressure on your eyes to see better. You focus them. That's all. So you focus yourself to pay attention. Outside, relaxed. Inside, attention. And this breath, you know, in the Latin, the word spiritus means breath. our English word spirit comes from this Latin, spiritus, breath. Breath is spirit, and spirit is no other than breath. The breath, see, this quiet breathing, natural, even, quiet breathing, so that you can come to know this spiritus. Yeah. And this is the key to Zazen. It's actually a key to our whole lives. Yeah. We know that we can't speak without breathing. You can't even stand up without breathing. You can't even sit there without breathing. No. So you, when you're speaking, you inhale first, and when you exhale, the voice comes out. You do things with, and there's sort of, you know, and you hear sound. If you're going to jump or to leap or to skip, unconsciously you inhale. And while you are leaping or jumping, you stop breathing. And when the leap is completed, you immediately exhale. We all do that. And we all do that without being taught to do that. It's automatic. It comes with the territory. And this exhalation, this breathlessness, is more powerful than the inhale. And when we sit with this quiet breathing, it clears the mind. And all of a sudden, there is something in that clear sky that we didn't know before. See, it's like when we sit, We sit in this zendo. We sit in this atmosphere. And during this week, these past few days, it has been quite an atmosphere. That kind of an ambience sharpens the mind. You should contribute to that. You're radiating your zazen. You're giving until it gets so strong you can taste it in the room. Now, Zen was born in China. It came from India, but it needed the Taoist teaching of the Buddha came from India. It needed the Taoist point of view to bring out what is in. But it was in China, see, that this marriage took place. China, there was this deep stillness and the wisdom were equally stressed. The terms they used coming from India were samadhi and pranya. And we should develop maybe some of our own language here in America to be able to express Zazen, as well as the old masters in China did. The time has come to cook our own food. In a manner of speaking, we are Dharma pioneers. For the age of Zen in America is happening now. It's beginning. It has been slowly building. Tibet, you know, that's not too much over there anymore. In Japan, Zen is not what it once was. And of course, it helps us a great deal if a monk from Japan comes to help us. And we know this from this past week. And we hope this particular monk will return again. In the meanwhile, you have to be content with your own stillness and your own realization. But also, you must leave something for coming generations. I mean, we're just a little cog in a wheel. You know? We leave something by transmitting from heart to heart. There are lots of things in the practice that cannot be described. How to strike a bell, how to strike the bells, how are you going to describe how it is done properly? How about the duration between the strikes and the strength of each strike? This is what we learn. It's one of the minor transmissions, to learn how to do little things correctly, properly. The sound of the gong, the sound of the bell, the sound of the clappers, they're very important in a right combination. And it allows the atmosphere in the zendo to become very sharp. Also, all the little movements that we make, and the ones we think we should make and don't make, everything is to make our zazen more lucid, more clear, because through these little techniques, we become more alert. In this world, what is in this room now? Huh? What is in this room now? Space. And it's full of space. Because of that space, you can see this form. This form, that form, that form, that form, because of the space. So this is the form of space. This is the form. This is a state of consciousness. The form represents it. Represents. Yeah, close as I can come. Form represents a state of consciousness. Kitty has a state of consciousness and she has her form. And the butterfly has a state of consciousness and it has its form. So we have this form. Now this form makes a movement. Out goes a hand, makes the movement. That's time. How you function is time. So space and time, form and function. This is what you're being taught by these little techniques. It is extremely important. Form and function. Space and time. People come and ask me, you know, would you tell us something about time? All you have to do is look at yourself. You will understand time. You will come to understand time. Many levels of time. Everything you ever want to know is right here, right now. Just open up and let it come out. And those of us who have, let us say, the bodhisattva vow, you know, you're going to save yourself and all sentient beings. If you have that in your heart, then maybe we better begin seriously to think about ourselves, yourselves, as mothers and fathers, grandmothers and grandfathers of American Zen or Western Zen or whatever you want to call it. But it begins here. So you sit in this deep stillness. For now, forget the world. Forget your emotions for now. They'll rise and show themselves to you. Your thoughts will rise and show themselves to you. But you're just sitting there inhaling and exhaling very quietly and very deeply and not attached to any emotion or any thought that rises. As Hawking said, you know, don't absent-mindedly look around here and there asking, what is Buddha? That's absent-minded, huh? If you still ask, what is Buddha, after inhaling it and holding it in your pocket, if you are still pocketing, if you ask, and you are pocketing stolen goods and pleading innocent. Now, we've had a very wonderful week, a few days with Shinzan Sama. Some of what he has taught us will remain. Some of it has already gone by the board. Some of it we will pick up again. We need to have him come back. And I think if I had had the time yesterday, I would have gone out and looked for a frog. For he is going and is returning. Each little item is important. The importance, how important, you will realize only when you realize yourself. So we have a very, today, deep domo arigato gozaimasu. And I have for all of you. You did good. You did good. Okay? You want to have Neve done the chant at the end of it? Let's do that, huh? Instead of the other. Thank you.
If you find Lola's talks valuable, more will be posted in weeks to come.